Regret and Redemption in the Gunslinger by Robin Firth. Robin Firth is the author of the acclaimed Dark Tower Concordance and works as Stephen King's research assistant. Spoilers warning. This essay refers to events that take place in all of the Dark Tower novels, including Book 7. Please note, all Gunslinger excerpts used below are drawn from the 2003 edition unless otherwise stated. Introduction. In his introduction to the fifth Dark Tower novel, Wolves of the Kala, Stephen King tells us the subtitles for the first seven books of his magnum opus. They are Resumption, Renewal, Redemption, Regard, Resistance, and Reproduction. For The Dark Tower, the seventh and final installment of Roland's quest, the subtitle is Revelation, Redemption, Resumption. What these subtitles indicate, and what constant readers have always known, is that the Dark Tower novels are not just a series of adventure stories. In the tradition of John Bunyan's 17th-century Christian allegory, Pilgrim's Progress, the Dark Tower novels are an account of one man's search for redemption. Each subtitle summarizes the spiritual and moral development that Roland undergoes as he transforms from a dangerous, tower-obsessed loner into a chivalric knight. Note, a constant reader is a devoted King fan. He or she probably owns all, or almost all, of King's works and has read them multiple times. King often addresses his fan base this way. It is a playful and affectionate term. To those reading the Dark Tower books for the first time, the subtitle of The Gunslinger may prove initially puzzling. What is Roland resuming, and why? The Gunslinger's subtitle, Resumption, refers to an aspect of Roland's character arc only hinted at in the 1982 and 2003 versions of The Gunslinger, but which is made plain in the final book of the series. Although he does not know it, Roland is trapped in a time loop. The Dark Tower he quests for is not a structure, but a god, and that god is determined to hold the Gunslinger accountable for all of his sins. Roland has not lived through the events of The Gunslinger once, but many times, and he is damned to relive his quest, resuming it over and over until he finds a way to atone and change. Nowhere in the Dark Tower series is Roland's need for transformation more obvious than in the first book, The Gunslinger. It is in this novel that Roland's actions are especially repugnant, but it is also in this book that the foundations of his transformation are laid. Through a series of carefully placed flashbacks, and through his burgeoning relationship with a vulnerable young boy named Jake Chambers, Roland begins to understand how he has transformed from an idealistic and naive apprenticed gunslinger into a cynical and hardened killer. In The Gunslinger, we first meet Roland Deschaine, the last of Midworld's elite clan of warriors descended from the land's semi-mythical hero, Arthur Eld. Described as a man of blacks and whites, as well as a plotter and a bludgeoner, Roland is portrayed as an embittered loner who has suppressed the memory of his past in order to focus on his quest for an elusive, fey structure called the Dark Tower. The tower is the linchpin of the time-space continuum, and Roland wants to climb to its top and question whatever god or demon resides there. When we initially join Roland on his quest, he is trekking across Midworld's endless Mohane Desert, single-mindedly pursuing a sorcerer called the Man in Black. Roland believes that the Man in Black can lead him to the tower, and our gunslinger will stop at nothing, not even murder, to catch his quarry. In this initial Dark Tower novel, Roland is courageous and his skill with the gun is legendary. But he lacks the idealism and morality of the traditional hero. He is, in essence, an anti-hero. But as in all good tales, Roland is not a static character, and his personality is complex. Although he often seems heartless, there is a romantic side to his nature which allows him to learn from his mistakes and, ultimately, to change. And over the course of the Dark Tower novels, Roland Deschaine changes profoundly. As the series progresses, we begin to discover that Roland's journey is not just outward, toward a mythical place called the Dark Tower, but also inward. The landscape he traverses is both literal and symbolic, and his quest is not just to find the linchpin of time and space, but also to redeem his corrupted soul. In The Gunslinger, Roland's sins are many. He has forced sexual relations with a woman, he murders the entire population of a town, including his lover, Allie, and he lets a trusting child drop to his death. Suspicion and killing are never far from his mind. Within the first few pages of Chapter 1, The Gunslinger, Roland meets a red-haired border dweller named Brown, who shares water and food with The Gunslinger and gives him shelter for the night. But despite these kindnesses, murder is not far from Roland's mind. I started to tell you about Tull. Is it growing? It's dead, the gunslinger said. I killed it. He thought of adding, and now I'm going to kill you, if for no other reason than I don't want to have to sleep with one eye open. In the lengthy confession that follows, Roland tells Brown about his adventures in the town of Tull. He begins by describing his love affair with a scarred barkeep named Allie, and his confrontation with a strung-out weed-eater who'd been brought back from the dead by the Man in Black. But when Roland begins to recount his interactions with a mad female preacher named Sylvia Pittston, the tale becomes dark. Before Roland's arrival in Tull, Pittston had already engaged in sexual relations with the man in black, and now Pittston believes that she is pregnant. But Roland maintains that the demon inside her is no more than her own sexual desire. He proceeds to remove this demon by penetrating her with the barrel of his gun. "The price of my flesh would be your life, gunslinger. He has got me with child. Not his, but the child of a great king. If you invade me..." She let the lazy smile complete her thought. At the same time, she gestured with her huge mountainous thighs. They stretched beneath her garment like pure marble slabs. The effect was dizzying. The gunslinger dropped his hands to the butts of his pistols. "You have a demon, woman, not a king. Yet fear not, I can remove it." Page 61. Despite Pittston's resistance, she recoils from him in terror, stabs the sign of the eye at him, and locks her legs together like a vice. Roland pries her legs apart and slides the barrel of his gun into her body. The scene makes for uncomfortable reading, since both Roland's violence and Pittston's arousal are obvious. Pittston makes strange, lustful keening noises, and her breath comes in savage grunts, page 58. But while her body may respond to Roland's aggression, her huge body tried to suck the invader in, and she eventually orgasms, she remains terrified and quite consciously fights him. Even as her breath becomes rough, she continues to scream, "No! No! No!" and beats his head with her fists. At the end of the interaction, she seems to wilt and grow smaller, page 59. Although Pittston is initially a powerful and frightening figure, by the time Roland is finished, she is reduced to a pitiful victim who weeps with her hands in her lap. When Pittston demands that Roland leave, saying that he has killed the child she carried, Roland maintains that her pregnancy was an illusion. "No child," he says. "No angel, prince, no demon," page 59. Even if Pittston's pregnancy was an illusion, her desire for revenge is very real. Calling Roland Satan and the interloper, she sets her congregation on him like a pack of rabid dogs. Although the people of Tull are only armed with stones, chunks of wood, forks, and knives, Roland instantaneously begins shooting. His reaction was automatic, instantaneous, inbred. He whirled on his heels while his hands pulled the guns from their holsters, the butts heavy and sure in his hands. Page 61. What makes this scene so disturbing is not only Roland's almost unearthly skill at killing, but also the way he can, without remorse, even kill his lover, Allie. In the 2003 edition of The Gunslinger, this murder is made a little less cold-blooded, since Allie begs to be shot. Uttering the sinister magic word 19, one of the many psychological traps left by the man in black, she prompted Nort to divulge the secrets of the afterlife, and she can't live with the knowledge. It was Allie, and of course it had to be Allie, coming at him with her face distorted, the scar a hellish purple in the lowering light. He saw that she was held hostage. The distorted, grimacing face of Sheb appeared over her shoulder like a witch's familiar. She was his shield and sacrifice. He saw it all, clear and shadowless in the frozen, deathless light of the sterile calm, and heard her. "Kill me, Roland. Kill me." I said the word, 19. I said, and he told me, "I can't bear it." The hands were trained to give her what she wanted. He was the last of his breed, and it was not only his mouth that knew the high speech. The guns beat their heavy, atonal music into the air. Her mouth flapped, and she sagged, and the guns fired again. The last expression on her face might have been gratitude. Sheb's head snapped back. They both fell into the dust. Pages 61 and 62. In the 1982 edition, Allie's death is much more horrific, since she doesn't beg Roland to kill her, but begs Roland not to shoot. It was Allie. And of course it had to be Allie, coming at him with her face distorted, the scar a hellish purple in the lowering light. He saw that she was held hostage. The distorted, grimacing face of Sheb peered over her shoulder like a witch's familiar. She was his shield and his sacrifice. He saw it all, clear and shadowless in the frozen, deathless light of the sterile calm, and he heard her. "He's got me, oh Jesus, don't shoot, don't, don't, don't!" But the hands were trained. He was the last of his breed, and it was not only his mouth that knew the high speech. The guns beat their heavy atonal music into the air. Her mouth flapped and she sagged, and the guns fired again. Sheb's head snapped back. They both fell into the dust. 1982 edition, page 59. Over and over, Roland's killing spree is described as both graceful and heartless. He moves like a dancer to avoid the flying missiles, even as his innocent lover's body lies crucified in the dust. Trained well in the art of war, Roland never misses when he shoots. Each blast of his pistol finds a vital spot, as his hands pick targets with ease and dreadful accuracy, page 62. Despite the constancy of the attack, his fingers reload with a rapidity that had been trained into them, page 63. All around him, men, women, and children fell like nine pins in a game of points, page 63. Transmogrified into an eye and a hand, in other words, a scope and a trigger, Roland lets his hands do their reloading trick, though his mind is far away and absent, page 64. For Roland, killing is a religious experience, and he is a prophet of death come to teach Pittston's congregation about his personal creed. Could he hold up a hand, tell them he had spent 1,000 years learning this trick and others, tell them of the guns and the blood that had blessed them? Not with his mouth, but his hands could speak their own tale. Page 64. When it comes to words, Roland may be a reticent man, but when it comes to death, he is fluent. Toward the end of the attack, Pittston runs at Roland, waving two crosses and screaming, "Devil! Child killer!" Roland shows his disdain for her religion by blowing the roods to splinters. He then puts four more bullets into Pittston's head, page 65. Even with Pittston dead, the congregation continues to run at him like a vicious clot, page 65. Someone throws a knife and the hilt strikes Roland between the eyes, knocking him over. Roland's aim is thrown off and he misses one target, but then downs 11. Lying among his spent shells, being stabbed and kicked and hit, Roland throws his attackers off and shoots some more. When a small boy cut him across the calf, Roland blew his head off, page 66. Although Roland's shooting spree began in self-defense, it ends in blatant murder. Even when the final townsfolk turn and try to flee, he continues to aim and fire. They were scattering, and he let them have it again, back shooting now. The ones left began to retreat toward the sand-colored, pitted buildings, and still the hands did their business, like overeager dogs that want to do their rolling-over trick for you not once or twice, but all night, and the hands were cutting them down as they ran. The last one made it as far as the steps of the barbershop's back porch, and then the gunslinger's bullet took him in the back of the head. Page 66. Like overeager dogs that want to do their rolling-over trick for you not once or twice, but all night. Roland's hands continued to aim and fire until every man, woman, and child is dead. The fact that Roland's hands are like overeager dogs implies that they are not completely under his control. Who do they show their trick to, if not Roland himself? Although he could have mounted his mule and left town, who could have followed him, and who could have shot at him when no one else had a gun? Roland begins back shooting, which almost by definition is butchery. After the killing is over, Roland follows the zigzagging trail of death, counting his victims. Without regret, he realizes that he had shot and killed 39 men, 14 women, and 5 children. He had shot and killed everyone in Tull, page 66. He then returns to Alley's Honky Tonk, where he ate hamburgers and drank 3 beers while the light failed. That night, he slept in the bed where he and Alley had lain, page 67. Roland has no dreams and no nightmares either. When he awakes the next morning, the wind was gone and the sun was its usual bright and forgetful self. The bodies of his victims have disappeared, gone south like tumbleweeds with the wind. Page 67. After recounting his Tull experiences to the border dweller named Brown, Brown asks Roland if the confession has made him feel better. But Roland doesn't understand why he should feel remorse. Brown responds that being human means feeling regret after committing murder. Just as he was about to get up and spread a pallet in the corner, Brown said, "There. You've told it. Do you feel better?" The gunslinger started. "Why would I feel bad?" "You're human," you said. "No demon. Or did you lie?" "I didn't lie." Page 67. At the close of The Gunslinger, Roland is still the same man he was in the opening lines, a loner obsessed with his quest who is an accomplished gunman able to kill without regret. However, in Chapter 2, that picture begins to change. The Way Station, Kef and the Waters of Life. At the beginning of The Way Station, Roland is the same unyielding character we left at the end of The Gunslinger. Only now, Roland is trapped in the heart of the Mohane Desert and has run out of water. Though he is desperate and stumbling, he tries to remember the pride that was beaten into him as a child. He didn't want to fall, even though there was no one to see him. It was a matter of pride. A gunslinger knows pride, that invisible bone that keeps the neck stiff. What hadn't come to him from his father had been kicked into him by Court. A boy's gentleman, if there ever was one. Court, Yar, with his red bulb of a nose and his scarred face. Page 74. As so often happens in the Dark Tower novels, the desiccated landscape Roland travels through also symbolizes his emotional state. In High Speech, the term Kef means the sharing of water. It also implies birth, life force, and the emotional bonds that join people to one another. Kef is, in essence, The Water of Life, Concordance, page 528. When Roland traveled toward Tull, he was completely alone. His youthful quartet of gunslingers was dead, and he had little desire to bond with others. Kef was in short supply. In the landscape, too, water was scarce, as we were told in the previous chapter. It was ugly country. It had showered twice since he had left Pricetown, grudgingly both times. Even the Timothy looked yellow and dispirited. Page 18. Yet after Roland's rampage in Tull, where he killed his lover Allie as well as every other man, woman, and child in the town, what little life water remained in the landscape has dried up completely. Now, that dryness is killing him. 16 days after leaving Brown's hut, his water skins are empty and he is very likely a dead man. Page 74. Even the seemingly indestructible devil grass is stunted and yellow. Page 74. Exhausted and disoriented, Roland falls and skins his hands. He then becomes obsessed with the drops of blood rising to the surface of his abraded skin. He looked at the tiny beads of blood on his flaked skin with disbelief. The blood looked no thinner. It looked like any blood, now dying in the air. It seemed almost as smug as the desert. He dashed the drops away, hating them blindly. Smug? Why not? The blood was not thirsty. The blood was being served. The blood was being made sacrifice unto. Blood sacrifice. Page 75. If Roland has a god at this point in his development, it is the Old Testament's vengeful Jehovah. His killing of the final fleeing citizens of Tull was retaliation, or in the words of Exodus, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. King James Bible 21:24. As such, those slaughters were justified. But in this passage, Roland speaks of a blood debt. In other words, the price for spilling blood in Tull is payment in blood, and almost all things are by the law purged with blood, and without shedding of blood is no remission. Hebrews 9:22. But why would Roland, who by his own admission felt no regret over the Tull massacre, feel that his own spilled blood is a necessary atonement? Perhaps because Roland is a more complicated character than he at first seems. He was not always alone, and he was not always a heartless killer. As Roland plods across the hardpan, disoriented and hallucinating, he has a vision of himself as a very small boy. In this vision, he is in his castle bedroom. His mother has tucked him into his bed beneath the window of many colors. In this memory, which replays maddeningly like a dog chasing its own tail, it is raining outside, and his mother is singing a nursery rhyme to him, a nursery rhyme which is also about rain. The rain in Spain falls on the plain. There is joy and also pain, but the rain in Spain falls on the plain. We walk in love but fly in chains, and the plains in Spain fall in the rain. In this hallucination, water and love, the two aspects of Kef which now are missing in his life, are in abundance. Page 73 and 74. Already the harsh gunslinger culture of Gilead had begun to take its toll on Roland. His mother was not allowed to sing to him at bedtime, because all small boys born to the high speech must face the dark alone. But the waters of Kef had not yet dried up in him, or in the world around him. Page 74. Beyond the beautiful multicolored window it is raining, giving the landscape and the people in it much-needed sustenance. By the time Roland is 14, he will hate his mother and reject the nurturing she represents in favor of his father and the gun. But now, at the moment where Roland faces the prospect of his own demise, he remembers his mother's love and a different, gentler way of being. Jake, the way station, and Kef. The hallucinatory recollection of maternal love that assails Roland in the desert prefigures an important encounter. Stumbling forward, Roland comes across a way station, which was originally a stopping place on the old coach line. Standing outside the station is a person whom Roland at first takes to be the man in black, but soon realizes is an altogether different creature. The ultimate repercussions of this meeting will prove to be enormous. He got up, holding his hands to his chest, and the thing he'd seen earlier was almost in front of him. So close, it made him cry out a dust-choked crow-croak. It was a building, surrounded by a fallen rail fence. Someone sat in the shadow, and the building seemed to lean with the burden of his weight. Him, then, at last, the man in black. He came the last quarter mile at a jolting, flat-footed run.
"You're covered! You're covered! Hands up, you whore son! You're—"
The figure moved restlessly and stood up. The gunslinger thought, "My God, he is worn away to nothing. What happened to him?" Because the man in black had shrunk 2 full feet and his hair had gone white. He sucked the white-hot air into his lungs and hung his head for a moment. When he raised it again, he saw it wasn't the man in black, but a boy with sun-bleached hair. Page 77. The boy Roland meets is Jake Chambers. When Roland collapses moments later, Jake saves Roland's life by giving him water. Unlike Roland or the people in Roland's world, Jake has not yet been desiccated by the waterlessness of the desert. His arms were thin, but the skin, although tanned, had not dried and cracked, page 80. Roland realizes that if circumstances were reversed and he had been Jake, I would have taken one of my guns and shot me right where I lay. But Jake is a very different kind of being, page 80. After giving Roland water, Jake offers the gunslinger some food. It soon becomes apparent that Jake comes from our world, and the last thing he remembers is being hit by a car and dying. Expressing his fear of this strange, new, lonely place where he has unexpectedly found himself, Jake is on the verge of tears, page 81. But rather than respond with sympathy, Roland's cold retort is, "Don't feel so sorry for yourself. Make do." Page 81. Jake, in turn, responds with bewildered defiance, "I didn't ask to be here." Page 81. But Jake's more sensitive nature does not leave Roland unmoved or unchanged. In Jake's company, Roland, who until now has chosen to neither ruminate upon nor evaluate his own actions, has an unusual moment of self-reflection. In this reverie, Roland grudgingly expresses some guilt for the murders he has committed, and betrays a budding concern about what kind of future this boy will have with only himself as a companion. He also begins to question the rightness of his quest. The gunslinger ate another piece of the meat, chewing the salt out of it before swallowing. The boy had become part of it, and the gunslinger was convinced he told the truth. He had not asked to be part of the Man in Black's game. He himself, he had asked for it. But he had not asked for the game to become this dirty. He had not asked to turn his guns on the townsfolk of Tull, had not asked to shoot Allie with her sadly pretty face, had not asked to be faced with a choice between duty and flat-out murder. It was not fair to ring in innocent bystanders and then make them speak lines they didn't understand on a strange stage. Allie, he thought, Allie was at least part of this world in her own self-illusory way. But this boy? This goddamn boy? Page 82. Already we sense that Roland and Jake's interaction will end in tragedy, but we also suspect that something new is happening to our gunslinger. He is gaining self-awareness. Despite Roland's coldness, the gunslinger and the boy begin to build a relationship. In order to learn more about Jake's past, Roland hypnotizes him with a bullet. As Jake's eyes close, he looks so vulnerable that Roland once again has a vision of his almost forgotten mother, as well as her protectiveness and her love. He once more seemed to hear his mother singing, not the nonsense about the rain in Spain this time, but sweeter nonsense, as he rocked on the rim of sleep. "Baby bunting, baby dear, baby bring your basket here." Page 84. Suddenly Roland, the man without remorse, has a premonition of terrible crimes to come. His mouth fills with the smooth, loaden taste of soul sickness, and he is assailed with a sense of self-disgust. The shell he has been using to hypnotize Jake suddenly feels horrific, like the spore of a monster. Page 84. Dropping the shell in his hands, Roland squeezes it with painful force. Page 84. For the first time since our initial encounter with him, Roland does not mindlessly accept his ability to kill, but damns himself for it. He realizes that had the bullet exploded at that moment, he would have rejoiced at the destruction of his talented hand, for its only true talent was murder. Page 84. Trying to come to grips with these newfound emotions, Roland reminds himself that there had always been murder in the world, but such thoughts proved to be of little comfort. Throughout history, men like him have committed murder, rape, and other unspeakable practices in the names of the good, the bloody myth, for the grail, for the tower. Page 84. These sacrificial horrors will not end now, and they will not end with him. Amid these thoughts, Roland once more hears the sweet sound of his mother's voice. However, rather than listen to that gentle love song again, Roland brushed the song and the sweetness of the song aside. Page 84. But despite his best efforts, Roland cannot halt the growth of this new self-awareness or the new emotions that this young and vulnerable boy are beginning to arouse in him. Roland begins to remember that he, too, was once a boy. He, too, was once able to love and be loved. Watching Jake sleep, Roland contemplates his own boyhood, which usually seemed to have happened to another person, but which now seemed poignantly close. Page 89. Quite appropriately, the first person that Roland thinks about during this unexpected reminiscence is his brutal teacher, Court, the man who shaped Roland's adult personality. Described as a violent midnight carouser, Court had loved and trained three generations of apprentice gunslingers, but his teaching methods were both cruel and merciless. Page 173. He thought of Court. Court, an ageless engine of a man. His face stitched with the scars of bricks and bullets and blunt instruments. The scars of war and instruction in the arts of war. He wondered if Court had ever had a love to match those monumental scars. He doubted it. Page 90. Court's job was to prepare young warriors for the treacherous times they lived in, He taught them to fight ruthlessly, because if they did not learn this lesson, well, they would either fail their test of manhood and be sent west in disgrace, or they would die under another's guns. Although Court's reality is the one Roland has adopted as his own, it is his armor and his protection. The deep places of Roland's mind contain other, less comfortable memories of companionship and love. Watching Jake sleep, Roland, who was not a man to dwell on the past, and who had only a shadowy conception of his own emotional makeup, page 90, is suddenly overwhelmed by memories of a carefree time in the green, fragrant land of his youth. It seemed to the gunslinger that if he closed his eyes, he would be able to hear the croaking of the first spring peepers, smell the green, almost summer smell of the court lawns after their first cutting, and hear, perhaps, the indolent click of wooden balls as the ladies of the East Wing, attired only in their shifts as dusk glimmered toward dark, played at points. Could almost see Cuthbert and Jamie as they came through the break in the hedges, calling for him to ride out with them. Page 93. Bemused, Roland, the man who has survived the Mohane Desert, laughs. The water-rich world is long dead. I am the last of that green and warm-hued world, he thinks without self-pity. The world he knew had moved on mercilessly, and he, to survive, has moved on mercilessly with it. Page 91. Jake as a trap left by the man in black. While in the cellar of the way station, Roland encounters a speaking demon in the building's sandstone foundations. Speaking in the sacred language of high speech, Roland demands that the demon speak. What the demon offers is a warning.
While you travel with the boy, the man in black travels with your soul in his pocket.
Page 96. Roland leaves the cellar. When he is halfway across the stable yard, Jake screams and runs to him, crying. He hugs Roland, and Roland feels the boy's face hot against his chest. The rapid beating of the boy's heart, so near his own, awakens unexpected emotions. Roland begins to realize that he loves Jake, but he also realizes that this love was, of course, what the man in black must have planned all along. Page 96. Jake's love and Jake's need will inevitably vie for Roland's attention and Roland's commitment to his quest. If he succumbs to Jake and the requirements of surrogate parenthood, he will fail, and the man in black will elude him. Roland, the warrior, has spent his life avoiding the traps set for him by his enemies. And was there ever a trap to match the trap of love? Page 96. But despite what he fears, Roland cannot help but care about this boy who, in some unacknowledged way, reminds him so much of his own younger, more innocent self. Roland and Jake leave the way station together. As their relationship grows and the waters of Kef are drawn from the deep human well of commitment, the landscape around them grows greener. They were 3 days out of the way station. The mountains were deceptively clear now. They could see the smooth, stepped rise of the desert into foothills. Further up, the land gentled off briefly again, and for the first time in months or years, the gunslinger could see real, living green. Grass, dwarf spruces, perhaps even willows, all fed by snow runoff from further up. Page 98. The waters of Kef have returned. However, Roland realizes that if he is to pursue his quest, this greenness will not last. Beyond the green, the rock took over again, rising in cyclopean, tumbled splendor. Page 98. The fact that Jake is not slowing him down does not bode well for the future. A plethora of more sinister possibilities flood the gunslinger's mind. Roland knows that the man in black drew Jake into this world and that the boy had been placed in his path. If Jake's purpose is not to slow Roland down, what sin of betrayal or murder might await up ahead to damn him? Page 98-99. But for the moment, Roland and Jake's relationship is superficially unchanged. Like a careful guardian, Roland takes care of the boy. When Jake reels and falls due to heat exhaustion, Roland, who up until now has refused to pause in his quest, insists they rest each afternoon. Page 100. He is surprised that his previous maddening sense of hurry is gone, but he is also more sure than ever that the man in black now wanted to be caught. Page 101. Once more watching Jake sleep, Roland thinks of his old friend Cuthbert and of his hawk, David, who was the first of many beings he befriended and then sacrificed. Remembering these things, the gunslinger's stomach seemed to rise painfully against his heart, but his face didn't change. Page 102. He knows that another trap, like the one in Tull, awaits him. Directly after this section, the story moves into flashback mode. We return to Roland's 11th year, and we see his first encounter with love and treachery. In Roland's experience, one inevitably leads to the other. Hax, a lesson in betrayal. In Section 8 of Chapter 2, The Way Station, we return to Roland's 11th year. This flashback is extremely timely since it shows Roland's first experience of treachery and his first lesson in the brutal reality of what it means to be an adult gunslinger. In essence, it is the first step in Roland's development from childhood trust to adult mercilessness. At the beginning of this section, Court is teaching falconry to his apprentices. When Roland's friend, Cuthbert, is slow to unleash his falcon, he is too busy talking, Court walked over to where the boys stood and swung his huge and twisted fist at Cuthbert's ear. The boy fell over without a sound. Page 102. When Cuthbert cries Court's pardon, Court swings at the boy again. This time, Cuthbert bleeds as he falls. Court demands that Cuthbert speak the high speech, the language of gunslingers.
Speak your act of contrition in the speech of civilization, for which better men than you will ever be have died, maggot.
Page 103. Cuthbert stands. There are tears in his eyes, but his lips are pressed together in a tight line of hate which did not quiver. Page 103. In a voice of breathless control, Bert admits that he has forgotten the face of his father, whose guns he hopes someday to bear. Page 103. As Bert speaks his contrition, Roland sees that the hawk, David, has taken down his prey. He tosses the bird some rabbit flesh, but when Roland tries to releash it, the hawk whirled, almost absent-mindedly, and ripped skin from Roland's arm in a long, dangling gash. Page 104. Pointing to the dripping slash on Roland's arm, Court tells him that he pissed the bird off.
The hawk does not fear you, boy, and the hawk never will. The hawk is God's gunslinger.
Page 104. After thumping Bert again, this time for sticking out his tongue behind the teacher's back, Court dismisses the boys, saying that their stupid maggot faces are going to make him puke. Page 105. Bert, he says, must go without supper and breakfast as punishment for his failures. However, Bert and Roland have no intention of obeying Court in this, even if they obey him in everything else. They sneak into the kitchens where the head cook, Hax, who is no friend of Court's, gives them each a thick slice of pie. Page 106. Physically and temperamentally, Hax is Court's opposite. He loves all children impartially. Even the boys who had begun the way of the gun, although they were different from other children, undemonstrative and always slightly dangerous, not in an adult way, but rather as if they were ordinary children with a touch of madness. Page 106. But kindly as he seems, Hax has a darker side. While eating their pie in a secret corner under the stairs, Roland and Cuthbert overhear Hax in a treasonous conversation with a guard. Hax secretly serves John Farson, also called the Good Man, who is the enemy of the gunslingers. With the guard's help, Hax plans to poison the town of Taunton. Upon discovering the head cook's treachery, young Roland's first reaction is bewilderment. Hax? Hax, who put a poultice on my leg that time? Hax? Page 109. A taste of warm despair rises in Roland's throat. But instead of exploring this confusion and despair, Roland reacts in a way that, in later life, will become all too common. His mind-snapped close cutting the subject off. Page 109. Whatever is left of the dove inside Roland dies in the talons of the apprentice gunslinger, the hawk in training. When Roland glances over at his friend Cuthbert, he sees the very same emotionless gaze that will later characterize Roland when faced with dealing death. Though Hax was the boy's friend, feeding them when they were hungry, caring for them when they were injured, he is a traitor and must die. When Roland exposes Hax's treachery and his father reminds him that Hax will now hang, Roland, who until now has been calm, explodes in anger. We cannot help but suspect that under Roland's adult emotional distance is childhood's simmering rage. I wanted to kill him. Both of them. Liars. Snakes. They hurt me. They did something to me. Changed something. I wanted to kill them for it. Page 105. Roland and Cuthbert ask to see Hax hang, and as part of their training, they are allowed to do so. Before they leave, Court gives the boys bread to place under Hax's feet.
When it's over, Court says, each of you will put this beneath his shoes. Mind you do exactly as I say, or I'll clout you into next week.
Page 113. Interestingly, it is only when Roland climbs the hangman's steps and faces the gibbet that he begins to understand the enormity of his responsibility, and that gunslingers are not the shining heroes he once thought them to be. What he is being trained to become is neither valiant nor beautiful, but dogged, emotionless, and exacting. They walked slowly toward the gibbet, and the birds took wing, cawing and circling like a mob of angry, dispossessed peasants. Their bodies were flat black against the pure dawnlight of the in-world sky. For the first time, Roland felt the enormity of his responsibility in the matter. This wood was not noble, not part of the awesome machine of civilization, but merely warped pine from the forest O'Barony, covered with splattered white bird droppings. It was splashed everywhere, stairs, railing, platform, and it stank. Roland shook his head slowly. There was a lesson here, he realized. Not a shining thing, but something that was old and rusty and misshapen. It was why their fathers had let them come. And with his usual stubborn and inarticulate doggedness, Roland laid mental hands on whatever it was. Page 114. Roland and Cuthbert descend from the scaffold, although they know full well that if Court had been present, he would have knocked them both sprawling, forced them back up the platform, and put the noose around each one of their necks in turn, and made them stand on the trap to feel it, page 115. If either of them had wept in fear or lost control of their bladder, Court would have struck them again. Although the thought of such punishment is frightening, Roland believes that his teacher's harshness would be justified. Suddenly hating his own childhood and its accompanying weakness, young Roland wishes for the long boots of age, page 115. In the end, Roland and Cuthbert, already inured to violence, decide that watching a man hang wasn't such of a much, page 116. Already becoming the formidable man his father predicts he will be, page 111, Roland decides he will pass his test and become a gunslinger, even if this means that someday he will have to play the part of hangman. After this flashback is finished, and the story returns to Roland and Jake climbing the mountains in pursuit of the man in black, Roland thinks back to the gallows tree and the fact that every adventure seems to end upon the killing ground, page 120. Despite all that he has experienced and all the evil he has done in the name of his mission, Roland has a brief hope that this time his quest will be different. Surely, when one searches for the Dark Tower, Ka, destiny, must show its true face, page 119. But for Roland, at this point in his development, the face of Ka is the face of death. The boy, the sacrifice, his face innocent and very young in the light of their tiny fire, had fallen asleep over his beans. The gunslinger covered him with the horse blanket and then curled up to sleep himself. Page 119-20. If duty calls for it, Roland acknowledges that he will let Jake die as he has let so many others perish before him. Roland's premonition of impending tragedy and betrayal is buttressed when, more than a week later, Roland and Jake close in on the man in black. In the shadow of a giant stone boulder, Jake begins to tremble violently and his face goes pale. He begs Roland to go back. When Roland refuses, Jake has a terrible epiphany. "You're going to kill me," Jake says. "You're going to kill me, and I think you know it." Page 150. Roland speaks the lie on his lips. He says, "You'll be all right, and a greater lie yet. I'll take care." Page 150. Yet when the gunslinger and the boy face the man in black moments later, the sorcerer laughs at Roland. "We'll speak on the other side, I think," he says. His eyes flicking to Jake, he adds, "Just the two of us." Page 152. Chapter 4, The Slow Mutants, Roland's coming-of-age battle and the rejection of the mother in favor of the gun. After their brief encounter with the man in black, Roland and Jake's relationship enters a new phase. What trust they had is now broken. Not only does Roland realize that betrayal awaits, but so does Jake. What is happening in their relationship is symbolized by the transformation of the landscape through which they travel. Gunslinger and boy have now entered the black tunnels below the Cyclopean Mountains. Although in the distance they can hear the thunder of the subterranean river, nothing grows here, and the way ahead is barren rock. Roland and Jake drink, but the waters of Kef have become dangerous. They drank from its flat, mineral-slated depth, hoping there was nothing in it that would make them sick or kill them, page 162. During the long hours of pumping a handcar along underground tracks, Jake asks Roland about his coming of age, and Roland tells him the story of how he won his guns. Like the story of Hax's hanging, it is a tale of deceit and treachery. Not surprisingly, that year, in Roland's home city of Gilead, the waters of Kef were in short supply. The season of full earth, which should have been abundant, came to the land like a vampire lover, page 169. It killed the tenant farmers' crops, turning the fields of the castle city of Gilead white and sterile, page 169. Just as the waters of Kef had disappeared from the land, the bonds of Kef no longer held among men. In the west, some miles distant and near the borders that were the end of the civilized world, fighting had already begun, page 169. The green, abundant land of Roland's childhood was gone. The center had frayed like a rag rug that had been washed and walked on and shaken and hung and dried. The thread that held the last jewel at the breast of the world was unraveling. Things were not holding together. The earth drew in its breath in the summer of the coming eclipse. Page 169. This terrible and dangerous year also happened to be the time of Roland's sexual awakening. As 14-year-old Roland was on the way to the roof to masturbate, he had not yet slept with a woman, he passed his mother's chamber. Outside her door, he met with his father's trusted sorcerer and advisor, Martin Broadcloak. Martin was dressed with a suspicious, upsetting casualness, black whipcord trousers almost as tight as leotards, and a white shirt open halfway down his hairless chest, page 170. His hair was tousled, as if after love play. Telling Roland that his mother wanted to see him, he ushered Roland into Gabrielle's chambers. By this point in his life, Roland's mother was almost a stranger to him, but she was a beloved stranger, page 171.
But Roland's recent sexual arousal made it obvious to him that Gabrielle and Martin were having an affair. For Roland, love and betrayal were once again riveted together. Only now, it was also lust that appeared treacherous, since it had made both his mother and Martin disregard their duty to the hierarchies of Gilead. Roland, who up until this point in his life had been a child, had a sudden adult realization. A game is being played, a charade. But what Roland doesn't yet know is who is playing with whom, page 171. For Martin, Roland feels a sudden amorphous fear as well as an inchoate hatred, page 171. But Roland's emotions for his mother and all that she represents also become tainted. We already know that Roland is destined to commit matricide, page 118. Though how and when this will happen, we do not discover until the fourth Dark Tower novel, Wizard and Glass. After a verbal confrontation with Martin, in which Roland reminds the sorcerer that he is nothing more than his father's bondsman and that he owed fealty to the line of Duchesne, Martin mockingly tells Roland to go and find your hand, page 172. Roland leaves, but he does not go to the roof. Instead, he storms to Court's cabin. Kicking in the door, he cries out in high speech, Court, I want you, bondsman, and demands to take his test of manhood. Court, a squat man runneled with scars and thick with muscle, tries to dissuade him. You are early, Puler, Court says casually, though he uses the formal interchange of high speech. 2 years early at the very best, I should judge. I will ask only once. Will you cry off? Page 174. Court knows only too well that failing the test means banishment, no matter what the cause. But Roland the boy is as intransigent as Roland the man will be. Although Court suspects that Roland has been played for a fool, and that Martin, a servant of the good man, wants to terminate the line of Duchesne and have Roland sent west in disgrace, Roland is blinded by his own rage. No matter what the risk, he is determined to win his guns so that he can kill the man who has dishonored the line of Duchesne and made his father into a cuckold. With regret, Court finally agrees.
1 hour, he says in a voice that is both dry and businesslike. And the weapon of your choice, page 175.
Despite his inexperience and youth, Roland wins his guns. He defeats Court by a clever ploy. Instead of using a traditional weapon in the square yard confrontation, Roland uses the hawk, David, who over the last 3 years he has befriended. Roland knows that David will be killed in this confrontation, but he is willing to make this sacrifice since his own future hangs in the balance.
I think you died today, he said, continuing to stroke the hawk. I think you will be made a sacrifice, like all those little birds we trained you on. Do you remember?
No?
It doesn't matter. After today, I am the hawk. Page 176, 177.
Not long after winning his guns, Roland will be sent east with two of his comrades, since the good man's forces, deprived of Roland's humiliation and banishment, now seek to kill him. The story of Roland's Hambry adventures and his love affair with a beautiful girl named Susan Delgado unfolds in Book 4 of the Dark Tower series, Wizards and Glass. In terms of Roland's fate, that tragic tale is but a continuation of the character arc begun in The Gunslinger. Roland proves to be an excellent soldier and strategist. At age 14, he outwits men much older and more experienced than himself, including the Big Coffin Hunters, led by the elderly failed gunslinger Eldred Jonas. However, in terms of his heart, Roland is less successful. Although Roland seemed to both love and lust for Susan, he somehow cannot completely shed the disgust he felt upon realizing his mother had followed the way of desire rather than duty. While trapped in the treacherous seeing sphere called Maryland's Grapefruit, Roland comes to believe that he must choose between Susan's love and his quest for the Dark Tower. He chooses the Tower, and as a result, Susan, who, because of her affair with Roland, has been branded a traitor to her town, is burned to death on a Cheruiyu tree fire. She dies proclaiming her love for him. To be a hawk, or God's gunslinger, as Court so aptly calls it, is a lonely and dangerous fate. You cannot friend a hawk unless you are half-hawk yourself, alone and only a sojourner in the land, without friends or the need of them. The hawk pays no coinage to love or morals. Page 176. By the age of 14, Roland had chosen the way of the hawk, and it is one he follows relentlessly. He does not question the way of the gun until his fateful meeting with the boy Jake at the waystation. However, as we suspected all along, Roland does not change easily, and his relationship with this lonely lost boy is destined to end in tragedy. By the end of Chapter 4, The Slow Mutants, Jake, who had once been trusting, has grown cynical. He knows that, to Roland, he is ultimately no more than a poker chip in the high-stakes game being played with the man in black, page 187. When Roland responds to Jake's anxiety offhandedly, he is secretly horrified at himself.
For the first time in his life, he fears the self-loathing that lies in wait for him, page 188. That self-loathing does not take long to blossom. After a long journey in the dark, Roland and Jake reach the end of the tunnel beneath the Cyclopean Mountains. But in order to return to the light, the pinprick of which they see ahead of them, they must first cross a trestle track on foot. This track, which is rotten with age, crosses a vast abyss. At the bottom of the abyss flows a powerful river. 90 feet from the trestle's end, a shadow steps out of the darkness and its silhouette blocks the daylight. It is the man in black. The sorcerer laughs loudly, and Jake begins to totter, his arms gyrating. As Jake falls, Roland faces a final test. It is one that will determine the trajectory of the rest of his life. Metal ripped and slewed beneath them. The rails canted through a slow and dreamy twisting. The boy plunged, and one hand flew up like a gull in the darkness, up, up, and then he hung over the pit. He dangled there, his dark eyes staring up at the gunslinger in final blind lost knowledge.
"Help me!"
Booming, racketing.
"No more games! Come now, gunslinger, or catch me never!"
All the chips on the table, every card up but one. The boy dangled, a living tarot card, the hanged man, the Phoenician sailor, innocent, lost, and barely above the wave of a Stygian sea. Page 203 and 204. For a moment, Roland hesitates. Once again, Jake calls for help, and the man in black pronounces that if Roland pauses in his quest, then I shall leave you. Enraged and blind to everything but his quest, Roland cries out,
"No, you shall not!"
Leaping over Jake, he lands in a skidding, plunging rush toward the light. Page 204. In the dreadful silence that follows, Jake speaks. "Go then. There are other worlds than these." Page 205. The trestle collapses and Jake falls to his death. Standing, drunkenly, pallid as a ghost, page 205, Roland realizes that he has crossed over into damnation, page 204. Ahead of him await further degradations of the spirit that might make this one seem infinitesimal, yet he will continue to flee the boy's face, trying to bury it in cunts and in killing, page 205. Yet ultimately, Roland knows that in the end, when he enters life's final room, it will be Jake's face looking at him over a candle flame. Page 205. In memory of his Isaac, his innocent sacrificial victim, Roland gathers wood. Then he and the man in black hold palaver in an ancient bone-strewn killing ground which Roland calls a Golgotha, or Place of the Skull, 1982 edition, page 197. Over the course of one endless night, the man in black reads Roland's future with a deck of tarot cards and then gives him a terrifying glimpse of the multiverse. When Roland awakes, he is 10 years older. His black hair is finer, and it is thinned and gone gray at the temples. The lines in his face are deeper and skin rougher. The man in black, who he sacrificed so much to follow, has been reduced to a skeleton. Taking the man in black's jawbone, Roland sets his back toward the rising sun. He has passed his own internal Rubicon, and his journey forward appears bleak. However, he will not abandon his quest. Heading toward the ocean, Roland declares, "I loved you, Jake." Sitting by the water's edge, Roland turns his face toward the light and dreams of reaching the tower and winding his horn to do some final unimaginable battle. Page 231. Conclusion. In the Dark Tower series, the force that controls men's lives is Ka, or fate, and Roland's interaction with Jake Chambers has altered the gunslinger's Ka. When we leave him at the end of the gunslinger, Roland, the heartless killer, has changed. He realizes that he loved Jake, and he regrets letting the boy tumble to his death. Although Roland is still devoted to his quest, he believes that he has damned himself. But it is only in this darkest hour that Roland's redemption can begin. In the opening scene of the second Dark Tower novel, The Drawing of the Three, Roland dreams he is drowning. But to Roland, this is a good dream, since he is the one drowning, not Jake. He found this a relief, because it would be far better to drown as Jake than to live as himself, a man who had, for a cold dream, betrayed a child who had trusted him. Page 5. As Roland tries to scramble out of the frothy waves to save his weapons, he is attacked by a monster he dubs a lobstrosity. In The Gunslinger, Roland wished for the destruction of his talented right hand, since its only true talent was murder, page 84. In The Drawing of the Three, Roland gets his wish. The monster clips off most of his right big toe and the first two fingers of the gunslinger's dominant right hand, depriving him of his trigger finger. Roland's wounds soon become septic. Dying of blood poisoning, Roland crawls up the beach where he finds two magical freestanding doorways. Through these doorways, he enters the minds of two people from Jake's home city of New York. The first is a junkie named Eddie Dean from 1987, who is addicted to heroin just as Roland is addicted to his quest for the tower. The second is Odetta Holmes / Detta Walker, a young African-American woman from 1964 who has lost her legs from just above the knee. Just as Roland has two selves, the heartless killer and the romantic who wishes to atone and change, Odetta slash Detta has two selves, one of whom is a socially conscious civil rights activist and another who is a dangerously enraged sadist. Finally, through a third doorway, Roland enters the mind of a psychotic serial killer named Jack Mort. Roland forces Mort to take his own life, symbolically destroying the part of himself that is also a kind of a serial killer. But before he does this, Roland prevents Mort from murdering Jake. Ultimately, by saving Jake in this world, he prevents Jake from dying in Midworld. At the end of the drawing of the three, Roland, who has been sick in body as well as mind and spirit, has been renewed. He has expiated the sin of killing Jake, and he now has two new traveling companions. But it is in the third Dark Tower novel, The Wastelands, that Roland's debt to Jake is repaid and his redemption truly begins. In a speaking ring, much like the Circle of Stones where Roland saved Jake's life back in The Gunslinger, Roland, Susanna, formerly Detta Odetta, and Eddie, create a doorway between worlds. Through it, they draw Jake into Midworld. During Jake's symbolic rebirth, Roland risks his life to snatch the boy from the monstrous demon that guards such portals. Once Roland and Jake have been reunited, Roland promises Jake that he will never let him fall again. Throughout the rest of the series, Roland keeps this promise. As we learn when Roland reaches the tower at the end of the seventh book of the series, he has not yet expiated all of his sins. But in this particular iteration of his journey, he has come a step closer to redemption.